So have the final messages from the party leaders resonated with you? Well, research shows that if you are tribal, meaning you identify with a particular political team, it's very hard to sway your vote with just facts and figures. Dr. Frank Moles is a political psychologist at the University of Queensland. He says Bob Hawke understood that political appeal is about offering a shared sense of where the nation's going. Frank Moles, thanks for speaking with us. We've seen an outpouring of admiration for Bob Hawke, a flawed character, but generally agreed a fine leader who drove major, difficult change. From the point of view of taking voters along with him, what was the core of his success, do you think?
I think part of the success was definitely his centrism, the fact that he did kind of not go for a radical position, but really was looking for common ground between Liberal and Labour voters. And that, of course, is very important because, as most people know, studying party politics and voter campaigning is that it's very much the swinging voter that is deciding elections. And I would imagine that Hawke would be phenomenal at getting the swinging voter or the undecided voter on board.
So how do you get the swinging undecideds on board? Is it facts that convince them? Is it big vision? Is it emotion? What works?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's a lot of research going back decades, but even centuries, if we include more political philosophy and political theory, that actually shows us time and again that we tend to overrate rational cost-benefit evaluations. We could call it hip-pocket voting or pocketbook voting, as it's sometimes called. And time and again, researchers point to evidence suggesting that that's really not where the action is. To get people on board, there has to be an appeal to emotion, but also an appeal to shared social identity, a sense of us, we, this, our country or our group or our tribe. So politics is a lot about a tribal identification, if you want to use that word, or a more neutral word is social identification that determines what people do. And a famous study going back in the 1980s by Kinder and colleagues in the United States already asked that question. Is it really hip-pocket voting, or he called it pocketbook voting, or is it partisan identity? And already that research showed quite clearly that partisan identity trumps hip-pocket voting. And this is a recurring theme. We see it in all sorts of ways coming back in research. Even Aristotle, of course, famously talked about ethos, pathos, and logos. He was talking about the persuasiveness of messages, which gave us a really interesting way of dissecting political messages. But modern-day research shows us very much that it's first and foremost a shared sense of identity that then mediates, that then filters what we see, including facts and evidence.
So looking at the current election campaign that we're just coming to the end of, what do you see? Do you see the parties understanding those principles in the way they've delivered their messaging?
Not necessarily. I think that politicians are in a way caught between a rock and a hard place as well. On the one hand, they have to show the audience, the voting public, that they're knowledgeable, that they have policy expertise. So they do have to address policy. They have to address costing. They do have to address technical issues around taxation, for example. But I think come election time, they continue in that kind of mode because that's how they argue in Parliament. That's what journalists will ask them about. And they'll press them on these kinds of issues. So come election time, then there's a tendency for politicians to continue unthinkingly in that mode. And deluding themselves, as it were, that the undecided or swinging voter is going to be persuaded by facts, evidence, logical arguments. And the evidence is simply not there to suggest that that's happening.
So what kind of identity could you successfully construct to win over the swinging voters in Australia in this day and age, when so much is about the economy, so much messaging about economic well-being?
So, of course, because we are used to team colours, there's the blue team, there's the red team, there's the green team, and the orange team, perhaps, we tend to be incredibly easily triggered. And Jonathan Haidt, the American political or moral psychologist, talks about the tribal switch, or he calls it the beehive switch, which is very, very easily triggered, and often in ways way before we start talking about evidence or rational arguments. And this goes back to that point that we know from research that we view evidence, facts, information through the lens of identity. And I can give you some examples if you want.
Well, I wonder if some of the examples are very starkly available for us in Trump's America.
Yes, correct. For us political psychologists, when Donald Trump said, I can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and people will still love me, I was not surprised by that, because he's, in a sense, really right about that, right? Because once the tribal switch of Republican support is switched on and the motivating force is more even the hatred for the other party than support for your own candidate, then everything has to be filtered through that partisan identity. So there's interesting experimental evidence done by a colleague of mine in the School of Psychology at UQ, Katie Greenaway, who did experiments with instruction sheets and experimentally exposed people to different instruction sheets. And one group were told that this was an in-group member that had written this instruction sheet, and the other group was told it was an out-group member. And what she found is that people evaluate that the helpfulness and the reliability and the in a very different light. If we think it is written by somebody by an in-group member, we tend to evaluate it much more positively. And the same, of course, goes for facts. First of all, we have to be a bit cautious talking about facts, because there's a whole discussion, of course,
about alternative facts,
but also what do we mean exactly with facts? But let's leave that aside for the moment. That if you are confronting somebody who's incredibly partisan, and that's the filter through which they view policy issues, then there is no amount of evidence that you can present them that will sway them in another direction. Right, because it's always going to be viewed from, yes, you would say that, or that information comes from an unreliable source. And this goes back to Aristotle's ideas about ethos, pathos, and logos. The trustworthiness of a message is important. The logic, the rational argument has to be sound, and it has to be seen to come from a trusted source. And it's precisely that trusted source that turns out to be the key factor. And what is a trusted source is somebody who we view as one of us.
So how do politicians win and lose elections then? Because if I believe that, you know, one colour is trusted source, the other isn't, what changes my mind?
Well, this is a bit ironic, I would say, because if you look at the mainstream parties here in Australia, and the story is, of course, the same elsewhere, parties use exactly the same technique. They still rely on these logical arguments and evidence and facts and Hippocrates arguments, whilst the real persuasive power comes from an overarching sense of identity and a shared sense of mission. So going back to your opening question about Bob Hawke, leaders like Bob Hawke, why are they great and why are they remembered as great leaders? It's because they can unite people. They can offer them a shared social identity, in this case, an Australian sense of pride and national trust and belief in the nation and where it's going. So the term that comes to mind is persuasive leaders are often incredible identity entrepreneurs. They're incredibly good and understand that the action is really not at the level of rational arguments and cost-benefit analysis, but it's about offering a narrative under which people can identify collectively. And those who do that well tend to do incredibly well in elections, and there's even research from the United States that confirms that.
And so between the two political leaders who are vying for the prime ministership in tomorrow's election, have either of them, in your view, successfully done what Bob Hawke did?
Personally, I don't think so. I think they're going very much with the same recipe from a political psychology perspective, that is. Of course, they have diametrically opposed ideas about many things. But if I look at it from the messaging campaign strategy perspective, it's the same old, same old. And ironically, it's often populist leaders who intuitively understand far better how to get people on board with a new mission. Now, the counter-argument would be, well, they still only get 10% or 15% of the electorate if they're lucky, so maybe that I should qualify it a little bit. But my sense is often that populist leaders have this kind of knack for identity politics, have this kind of ability, also perhaps because they don't have to worry too much about the detail of the policy. Often they have very little in the way of policy platforms. So populist leaders can really ramp up this sense of united. And, of course, Clive Palmer's campaign tries to do that, and we'll see whether that's a success recipe or not.
Frank Moles, thank you very much for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Frank Moles from the University of Queensland.